It's now time for the MLB.com Cut Forecast. Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast. It's a cast from Cut 4. Here it is.
Hello and welcome to the Cut Forecast. I'm Dakota Gardner. I am joined, as always, by Gemma Kaneko.
Hello.
Hey, Gemma, I have a joke for you.
What is it?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Ian.
Ian who?
Ian K, our boss. Ian, I can't believe that Gemma doesn't know who you are. I think that's offensive.
Not a joke, really.
I can't believe you told that joke on the podcast.
That voice you hear is Ian K. The reason why he is on the phone is because he is coming to us live from beautiful scenic Los Angeles, California, where he has watched Game 1 of the World Series. He will watch Game 2 in L.A. and then fly to Houston for games 3,
Ooh.
4, and potentially 5. Ooh, we will see. As you know, I think it will be a sweep. But we wanted to have him on the pod to talk about what it was like to be at the game. Ian, what is it like? I want to start, because we're going to dive into this, because it's the World Series, and everybody is very excited about it being the World Series. But it was also extremely hot in L.A. Is it still really hot in L.A.?
Yes, I can confirm. It's extremely hot in Los Angeles. Everyone's talking about the weather. No one really wants to hear other people talking about the weather unless it's Mike Trout. But I will say that this heat was different from most heat that I'm used to. It definitely has like that dry desert feel, and it's like actively scorching. Like I tried to stay out of the sun as much as possible yesterday, but I was outside for a while pregame, and you can just feel the sun very quickly burning your skin off your neck every time you leave an indoor area. In all seriousness, like even it was, I think, over 100 pregame, and there's not too much shade down on the field. And then even after the game started, like until the sun really went down, even after the sun went down, it was probably in the high 80s, I would say. I didn't check the temperature, but it was like I was actively sweating just sitting in the shade in my seat watching the game. the point where like I had to go inside and just kind of cool down for a while. So I was pretty impressed by any fans who weren't in shaded areas, because most of the stadium by first pitch or shortly after is shaded, but there's probably maybe a third to a quarter of the seats are just unobstructed sun in the upper deck. But those were full, so that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, good for them. And the players, too, obviously. I don't think you guys saw this being at the game, but on the broadcast they talked about how it was 103, I think, at first pitch, 103 degrees, which is more than the last two World Series Game 1s combined.
Wow.
It was 50 in Cleveland and 52 in Kansas City. So that just goes to show that this is like a ridiculous outlier. It's amazing that I don't know. I think, and this I guess kind of leads into the next point, which is that it's amazing that the players were able to be quite as on as they were, especially Clayton Kershaw, who was like,
I mean,
lights
that
out,
game,
unbelievable.
That game moved fast. Clearly, they were like, it's too hot for this. We're done. We're done.
That's true. That's true. Ian, so Kershaw pitched 7 innings. He had 11 strikeouts. He gave up, obviously, the homer to Alex Bregman. But what was it like in the what is it like in Dodger Stadium when Clayton Kershaw is dealing in the postseason?
So I'll say just generally, Dodger Stadium was great yesterday. It was really packed. There was not an empty seat in the stadium. I think LA fans have a bit of a reputation for showing up late, and this was a 5 p.m. start. So at first pitch, maybe it was, I don't know, 90% full. Like there were scattered open seats, but by 5:30, 6 o'clock, it was completely full, to my eye. And people were fired up. It was really loud. People were really hanging on every pitch. And Kershaw, I think, was definitely part of it. He was locked in. I mean, he's working extremely fast. He just kind of stalking the mound really up there. What I would imagine was kind of like a physical and intimidating presence, which he can have when he's on, because he's a big guy. He's got that baggy uniform. He goes right at hitters. And I think the crowd did respond to that. The fans themselves seemed locked in. They really were hanging on every pitch. And at the big moments, it really got loud and stayed loud for an extended time after the Taylor homer and after some of the big strikeouts from Kershaw.
Yeah, it to me it was like this was exactly how you picture a Dodger game. I know, like, I went last year and I saw a game at Dodger Stadium for the first time, and it was one of those things where, like, just scenically everything looks better. And there's something about just the Southern California sun and the shape of the stadium, and the bleachers are just like perfect, and just everything is perfect. And so it was so funny just having Kershaw out there dealing and the crowd being really into it. And then, yeah, like you said, the Chris Taylor home run in the first inning, like, that it set the tone so perfectly, and it's such a beautiful park for home runs. And I don't know, Gemma, what was it like watching on TV, watching Kershaw just like totally tear through the American League champions?
I mean, it started to feel kind of inevitable, I think, after a while, that someone would just come up and you'd be like, oh, I can set my watch by this. This is just going to, this inning is going to be over really quick. And then I know I'm going to have this much time. And then, you know, I really have to like sit still and watch the second half of this inning because the Dodgers were doing all kinds of fun things. But I was just startling, really, because we all know that Kershaw is great. We all know that. But it was still, like, the speed through which he just cut down that entire team was impressive.
Yeah.
Ian, what I want to know is, how is the atmosphere there different from any other World Series game one that you've ever been to?
That's a good question. People were certainly fired up. I don't know. I think that there's a similar atmosphere in almost any park when it's, like, the first time. You know, so, like, in Chicago last year or some other places, when fans have waited a really long time, there really is, like, an enthusiasm and a buzz and an excitement. And I think fans tend to believe that it's going to happen for them. Like, there were Dodgers fans on the concourse, you know, in the middle innings, like, literally yelling, "We're going to win, like, it's a lock, we're winning the World Series." I think you kind of feel that in a lot of places when a team hasn't been there in a while, you know, as opposed to, like, San Francisco, the second or third time around. I think it's a little bit more laid back and relaxed, and people are excited, but the stakes aren't quite as high. And yesterday it felt like the stakes were really high, like people were fired up, but it wasn't a nervous energy. You know, it was more of an excitement and a confidence, I would say.
How would you compare it to Chicago? Because you just said that, like, a lot of people on the concourse were shouting, like, "We're going to win the World Series." I imagine that was not happening in Chicago last year.
No, Chicago was definitely more tense. And I do think, like, the weather and the timing plays a factor. It's just a little bit weird. As someone who lives on the East Coast and is used to games starting at 8 o'clock, and the majority of World Series games the last, you know, 5 or 6 years have been Eastern or Central time. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of weird when it's 100 degrees and it's hot and bright and it feels like it's the middle of the afternoon, but there's kind of like the late night, you know, Joe Buck drama of a World Series game, and that combined, I think, makes it a little bit less tense and a little bit more festive. I would say Chicago is definitely more anxious, and Cleveland during that series also last year was pretty tense. People were afraid. People kind of, like, wanted to just get it over with and hope to win and, like, couldn't even watch, whereas yesterday people were really, like, enjoying it and hanging on every pitch.
I think some of that has to do with the fact that, like, it hasn't become part of the Dodgers' identity that they're in something of a championship slump. Like,
yeah.
Like with Chicago, that is what you thought of with the Cubs, and with Cleveland, like, the city went through the really long drought, and then Cleveland's baseball team itself had its own drought. And so it's just like, it was funny it's funny because I think the Dodgers are in the sort of lull where everybody still thinks, because they're a really good team pretty much every year. They just haven't won the World Series in forever. And it's like, oh, yeah, like, they haven't really internalized that to the same level. I think, like, you have to have a generation go by not seeing a championship for it to really matter.
Yeah, and I think part of that is because the identity of the Dodgers and the stadium is one of winning. Like, it's hard to overstate how much of that is just around in the park. Like, there's tons of Sandy Koufax, tons of Jackie Robinson, you know, the Kirk Gibson photo is around, like Vin Scully, and I think people associate all that history with great moments and winning, and even if it's kind of old, that's like the Dodger mystique. It as opposed to a Chicago or a Cleveland where it's all kind of, you know, blunders and missed opportunities.
It's kind of a, that's also kind of interesting to dig into, is like, why do we think of them as different from the Yankees? Like, I feel like, you know, they have a bigger payroll this year than the Yankees, but like, I feel like they still are something of like everybody's favorite second favorite team, or who's not a, you know, a Giants fan, let's say. But like, I think just everyone kind of has a soft spot for the Dodgers, you know, and yet they've always been pretty good. I guess it's just that they haven't won the same amount of championships.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think it may have something to do with just the park and like how it feels to be there. If you've ever come to a game, I mean, if you're sitting behind home plate and looking out, like, it looks like a fake backdrop, like the background and the sun. It doesn't look real. It's, you know, just such a fun experience. And I think that some of that, you know, Los Angeles vibes kind of thing filters into the team.
Yeah. October King, Justin Turner hit a home run in the sixth inning. What was that like in the stadium? Were people expecting it? Like, I, you know, not to bring this up constantly, but whenever I talk about that David Ortiz grand slam in 2013, everyone in the stadium knew he was going to hit a grand slam. So I'm wondering, like, with Turner, has he reached that level since this has been such a just demolishingly great postseason for him?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how to describe the energy. You know, like I said, people weren't nervous. I think because Kershaw was so good, people just kind of thought that Dodgers would score one way or another, and whether it was Turner or, you know, whether Bellinger was going to do something or Taylor again, or they have so many different guys who can hit a homer, and it kind of felt like at some point, all right, we're just going to get, you know, one more homer and that'll be enough, and that is how it went down. I mean, Kershaw, it felt like on another night that could have been a no-hitter or something. You know, he was that good last night, so people weren't really getting nervous. Didn't feel like, you know, a game that was going to extend into extra innings and get weird in a way that you know, the Astros could have stolen the game. Obviously, that's always possible, but I think that because Kershaw was so on, people just sort of assumed the Dodgers would score at some point. And the ball was really carried. I mean, I think Turner himself said after the game that he thought if it was 10 degrees cooler, that ball doesn't go out. But when he hit it, you could just sort of see the ball keep carrying out. You know, so it's pretty clear off the bat that it was going to go, and people erupted when that ball went out.
Yeah. MLB.com's Mike Petriello also, I believe, said that he was not sure that it would have gone out if not for the heat. So
Mother Nature herself is on the Dodgers side, is what we're saying here.
Clearly.
Yeah. Did you notice, Ian, that any player got like a louder cheer than any other? Did that happen at any point? Like, kind of in line with expectations, like, oh, I can't wait to see what this guy's going to do. We're more excited for this player than another.
There were a lot of applause for pretty much everyone. Turner certainly got a lot. I mean, there was like a roar for Kershaw when he was introduced in the bullpen. The loudest cheer of the night by far was Vin Scully when they showed him on the board in the box. I mean, the place erupted. It was somewhere, I think, in the middle innings, maybe even a little later, you know, sixth or seventh. The game moved so quickly, it was kind of hard to keep track. But people just erupted for Vin, and he kind of did the, like, bow to the left, bow to the middle, bow to the right, you know, very thankful for the ovation. And people just kept going. And he had to kind of do, like the praying hands to you, to the left, to the center, to the right again. And then kind of turned to, I think it was his wife with him, and said something. And people just kept cheering. Like, it didn't end to the point where they just, like, kind of moved the video board to something else. Like, they couldn't get people to stop cheering for Vince Kelly. So he is very much still beloved here.
Man, imagine being after Vin Scully on the video board. That's like the worst experience.
Wow.
Literally the toughest act to follow.
I don't remember. They might have just gone to like the ball in the hat game or something.
Like a still shot.
Just like we're not topping that. I had to ask you about one more moment, which is I think I was talking about this with Claire on Twitter last night, but basically like the coolest closer entrance in baseball these days is Kenley Jansen with California Love. What is that like?
I mean, that's very cool. He kind of strides in. He's another guy that, like, all of these dudes are big. Like, baseball players are all bigger than you realize. But Kenley just looks twice as big as any other baseball player. He's just enormous. He's, like, taller and wider than anybody else. So him running in, like, I don't even know. You know, it's like a giant striding in and with the music playing and stuff. That was definitely cool. I was, to be honest, surprised they took Kershaw out after seven. I probably would have run it back out there for the eighth, but that might be why Dave Roberts is managing this thing and not me. and again, like, it just, people were confident. You know, that game played out exactly the way the Dodgers wanted, and it almost felt scripted, and having Kenley come up to the ninth was certainly part of that script.
Yeah, I agreed with you at first in that it seemed to me ridiculous to take out Kershaw. He had, like, it was like 80 pitches or even less than that. Mm-hmm. Like, it was not a particularly taxing start for him. But I wonder if some of it is also, like, the just psychology of, like, what if he goes out for another inning and gets roughed up a little bit? Like, you know, there is this weird thing of Clayton Kershaw could get it done in the postseason, which is not true. And, like, giving him one of these, like, iconic starts might help sort of him if they need to turn to him again in game four.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It seemed like.
Yeah. And.
Yeah, go
nothing
ahead.
Else. I mean, did he even hit 90 pitches? I think he was, like, in the 80s somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think he hit 90.
And, you know, if he's going to pitch three times in this series, eventually that, you know, that saving him another 10 or 15 pitches could make a difference. You know, I doubt that was part of the consideration at the time. But, you know, they really like Morrow. They have confidence in him. You know, I was surprised that they didn't go back to Kershaw for the year.
Yeah, it was interesting. I guess that leads into tonight, which we're recording this on Wednesday. Tonight, game two is happening. Justin Verlander versus Rich Hill. Very exciting.
Very exciting.
What are you most excited to see in the ballpark, Ian? If it's just watching those two go at it, like, that's going to be good too. But what are you most looking forward to tonight?
I mean, Verlander's the obvious thing, so I won't spend too much time on that, you know. It'll be interesting to see, like, just how long that leash goes. I mean, he's already thrown 125 pitches once in this postseason, and the expectation is he is going to go out and he's not going to give the ball up, barring something crazy happening. But I am interested to see Rich Hill in this game. You know, he's probably one of everyone's favorite pitchers, favorite stories, and everyone is talking about Verlander, and rightfully so, because if the Dodgers do go up 2-0 with Darvish looming, like, that's huge for them. It might be tough for the Astros to come back, although who knows, going back to Houston. And nobody's really talking about Hill, who has the capability. I mean, he could go out, and he's probably not going to throw 8 innings, but he'd go out and throw 4 or 5 shutout innings. And if the Dodgers are able to get something off Verlander, that could be enough the way that, you know, the bullpen steps up. You know, outside of Morrow pitching an inning and Jansen for one, they're pretty much fresh and ready to go. So I think that'll be fun. You know, we've seen the Astros go extreme curveball with McCullers and other guys, you know, Morton during the ALCS, and Hill is certainly going to be doing the same thing, just spinning them. So I'm excited to see that in person. You know, sometimes he just makes hitters look like they've never seen major league pitching before just because of how he throws it. You know, Kershaw had a couple working last night, but that should be cool to see live.
Yeah. Gemma, what about you?
Oh, well, you know, of course I'm excited for Justin Verlander.
Your son, Justin
yes.
Verlander.
Yes. Though I am younger than him, so that's weird. But it's
no.
Okay. It's okay.
It's the same.
Of course, as I told you several times yesterday and today, that I think that this is the one that the Astros get, and it'll be Dodgers in 5. So I'm excited to see the Astros win their one game tonight, because this is the one. I wish this game would go 7, the series would go 7. I don't think it will, because both of these teams are so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I really want to, I'm looking forward to seeing the Astros still having a little bit of that fun tonight before their spirits are totally crushed by the Dodgers. That's what I'm looking forward to. Yeah. Ian, is there anything that you need to do in Dodger Stadium that you have not yet experienced that you would like to experience for this game? Any foods you need to eat? Any jerseys you need to spot?
That's a good question. I did get a little bit into the food yesterday. There's a whole bunch. Shout out to the Dodgers for doing special World Series food after they also did special food for the DS. Like, they didn't just have one set of special postseason food. There's new items. I tried, they had, like, a char siu baby back ribs that I got yesterday, which were good, which were very good. I was, like, on the field kind of by the third base side and then found an article detailing all the postseason food, and the ribs were, like, all the way up as high as you could go on the first base side, so I walked pretty much the entire ballpark to get them, and they were worth it. They also came with, like, a full-size side of garlic fries, which I appreciated. Completely unnecessary, because it was, like, almost a full rack. There were probably, like, 8 or 10 ribs in there, and then also the garlic fries, which are always a winner.
That's amazing. I also thought the sentence was going to go in a different direction, in that you found just some food by the third baseline, and then you ate it. But no, that's not what this was. You found an article.
There's a bunch. Jake and Jordan of Seth's Philly Barbecue went around and ate a bunch of stuff yesterday and reviewed it. And that's on Cut 4. Jake tried they have a cold brew soft serve float, I think.
Yeah, the cold brew coffee ice cream float.
Yeah, which I'm very interested in because I enjoy cold brew coffee. So I may try to find that at some point. And then there's like a fried chicken waffle sandwich, which Michael Clare reviewed during the DS and enjoyed. He said it was extremely sticky and difficult to eat, but he liked it. So I may go back and try that today.
The chicken and waffle sandwich is like the most brilliant invention of all time. My beloved New York Red Bulls have one at their stadium that I get like very regularly when I go. I think it's low key the best ballpark food innovation of the last 5 years, hands down. The chicken and waffle sandwich.
Wow.
I would just like one other note about Dodger fans yesterday was I have never seen lines for team merch like I saw yesterday, which is definitely a positive sign. Could point to a lot of lifelong diehard Dodger fans who became lifelong diehard Dodger fans within the last 72 hours.
Maybe they just wanted the World Series patch on stuff.
They might. and it's a positive sign. You know, it shows that people are really pumped up to be here, but like every single merch stand was just lines like around the corner, which is fine by me because they weren't lines for the food that I was trying to get at. But LA.com shop, guys, you can get it online.
Well, listen to the good company man, Ian K. Cut 4, giving a shout out to Cespedes Family Barbecue's article on Cut 4 and the MLB.com shop, which you can check out at MLB.com/shop. I also just want to say, I am very excited to watch the Dodgers win game 2. I didn't get to share my thing I'm most excited for, and it's that to see the Dodgers win game 2, because as we know, the Astros are not great on the road in the postseason, which is just fact, not small sample size theater. Let us move on, though.
Okay.
We have one more thing I want to talk about with the fans at Dodger Stadium. There are a lot of celebrities. Did you happen to run into any celebrities, or were there any non-famous fans that stuck out in your mind?
So I didn't run into any celebrities. I think the heat was a big factor in that, because usually celebrity fans, you know, people will congregate kind of around the cage during BP pregame, and that's where you'll just run into random famous people or random retired players, kind of people associated with the team. But that scene was not too happening yesterday, I think just because it was so hot and people didn't want to stand out in the heat. The Dodgers did do the usual thing of showing all the fans. And what I did like was that the fans who are here are the same celebrity fans who are at Dodgers games all the time. So it was like Ken Jeong, it was Rob Lowe, you know, people who we know are real Dodgers fans. It wasn't like all of a sudden, you know, Brad Pitt shows up and is the world's biggest Dodger fan just because he's in LA and the World Series is here. So I did appreciate that. I appreciated Seinfeld being at the game, Jerry Seinfeld, but wearing a generic World Series hat and not trying to claim that he was also a Dodgers fan. I respected that move.
Can't believe he wasn't wearing a Justin Turner Mets jersey.
That would have been quite the protest.
Too real.
Were there any non-famous fans that you saw that stuck out to you or no?
I mean, there were a lot of people who were just pumped up. There were a lot of Astros fans. I will say they turned out well, probably because, you know, LA is the sort of city where there's people from everywhere.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. You could see them on the broadcast. There were a lot of them there. Like, it was visible. You could hear them cheer for the Bregman home run. Like, they clearly made their presence known.
Yeah, and the bright orange helped to kind of out. Jake and Jordan did interview a couple guys who have a banana suit for Kike Hernandez that whenever he comes to the plate, they just throw on the banana suit and go wild. So that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
wait, they change in between? Or they? I mean, I assume they're wearing something under the banana outfit, but, like, why not just wear the banana outfit the whole time?
They're wearing regular clothes, and then when Kike comes up, one of them puts on a banana suit. It's like a banana, and the banana is wearing a top hat. I guess it's formal. and I think it's because they rotate. There's three or four of them, and each... a different person puts on the banana suit for each Kike at bat.
Sharing. That's cute.
I like that he wears the top hat. There's this. There's been a lot of formal wear in the postseason. There's that guy behind home plate.
Tuxedo guy, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You know, it's an important affair.
This is a good development here. At any rate, we'll have a lot more World Series baseball to break down as the World Series continues. Guys, this is not... Understand that a week from today, baseball could be over. There could just be no more baseball in 2017. That's weird to think about, right?
2017 is almost over, so at least,
I know. It's nuts. Ian, enjoy LA, but we want to move on to a really cool new podcast that MLB.com has launched that Ian has actually helped create and run. Ian, why don't you take a minute to tell us about this really cool new podcast that you're working on?
Yeah, you guys should all know about the Morning Lineup podcast. You can find it on iTunes or wherever else in the Newsmakers feed. So you subscribe to MLB.com Newsmakers podcast feed and you'll get it. Just every morning during the World Series, Anthony Castrovince and Richard Justice, and they will break down everything from the game from the previous night and then everything you need to know going to the upcoming game. It's going really well. This is a new thing that we're doing, at least for the World Series, and probably after that as well. I will say that it worked out great because Richard, especially, is based in Houston, is from there, so his insights into the Astros are really great. You know, his stories are great. He had a lot to say on today's episode about Verlander and tonight's game. And then Anthony Castro is also at MLB.com national writer, has been covering baseball for a long time. So these guys have a ton of fun stories. Special guests drop in. There's a special guest on today's episode, someone who has some experience pitching in big World Series games. I will not spoil the surprise, but you should download it today. You should download it every day during the World Series. That's the Morning Lineup podcast in the MLB.com Newsmakers podcast feed.
So that's every single day of the postseason?
Of the World Series.
Of the World Series.
As long as this World Series goes, there will be podcasts.
That's very cool. And are you the pitcher with World Series experience on that podcast?
It was me imitating a pitcher with World Series.
Yeah, that's good. Everybody likes it. It was Ian doing his Cliff Lee impression.
No, I was not the special guest. I was on the other side.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. That's Morning Lineup podcast in the MLB Newsmakers feed. Go subscribe. It's really cool. It's everything you need. Literally everything you need out of a podcast. And there's no Ian, so you'll love it. Let us now move on though to talk about Giancarlo Stanton. This was some World Series counter programming from Jimmy Kimmel Live. Giancarlo Stanton appeared on the show to just talk about baseball.
Why not?
Just to be like, hey, the World Series is going on. This is pretty cool. Like, it's like it's like when movie stars are on promoting their upcoming movie, and he was on just promoting the World Series. He was like, yeah, check it out. It's on right now. So, you know. Switch over. It was a really cool interview, but it raised an interesting question today, I think, in the offices of the Cut 4 blimp high above. Ian got some emails. Peek behind the curtain there of the Cut Forecast.
Mike is more perceptive than I thought.
But at any rate, we were debating this question. I posed this question to my fellow coworkers, and I said, who will be the most famous baseball player this time next year? And obviously there's some, you could debate who's the most famous baseball player right now, but I'm curious, who do you think is going to be the most famous baseball player next year? Because to me, it was interesting that Giancarlo Stanton just went on Kimmel for no, it's not like the Marlins are in the postseason. It's not like he's even doing like play-by-play or studio analysis for Fox. Like he's just hanging out. And he was like, I'll go on Jimmy Kimmel Live to talk about baseball. Why not? And that seems like a move that the most famous player in baseball would make. And so I'm curious to the two of you, Gemma, I guess I'll ask you first. Who do you think is going to be the most famous baseball player next year? And how do you see the next 365 days unfurling?
Well, I think it probably has to be a Yankee or a Dodger.
Ooh.
That's what I think. Well, when I think about who the most famous baseball player is right now, like who do you think the most famous baseball player is right now?
I think probably Bryce Harper.
Mickey Mantle.
Yeah, Derek Jeter. No.
I think Bryce Harper, right? Active baseball player. I would say it's probably Bryce Harper or Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that, I mean, obviously Aaron Judge won the Home Run Derby. It was a huge deal. Like, that might be something that a more casual fan would know as opposed to someone who watches every single one of his at-bats, you know? People gravitate, I think, towards larger-than-life feats like that when we're determining most
and
famous
people.
Baseball. Yes, and like, because he is a giant person.
He's a giant man.
So when I think about players like that, It's hard to say that someone who's just really, really good at baseball would become the most famous baseball player, because Mike Trout is not the most famous baseball player.
So who do you think it will be?
I think at this time next year, it'll probably be Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge.
Because I think the Yankees will be in the postseason again. I think it will be huge. I think it's probably Aaron Judge.
What if Kershaw pitches a perfect game in game four, let's say?
Like this week?
Yes.
I still don't think by this time next year he'll be the most famous baseball player.
Very interesting. All right, Ian, what do you think?
I also think it's harder for pitchers. Anyway, that's,
it is harder for. I don't know. Is it like I don't know. Ian,
I think
what
if we
do
went,
you think?
We can talk about this later. But I think if we went year by year and picked the most famous baseball player,
it would always be a hitter.
I don't think it would always be a hitter, but I think like 90% of the time it'd be a hitter.
That's interesting because they play every day. Yeah, mm-hmm. Ian, what do you think? Who's the most famous baseball player of 2018?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Gemma that it's probably Bryce or someone like that who's already famous. I do think that in the next years, it could be Judge. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the New York LA thing, I think that the reality is that to be the most famous baseball player, you have to be both good on the field and just make an effort to be the most famous baseball player, and probably be in a big market too. And we haven't seen Judge really do that yet. He's very much, you know, seems to have been to the Derek Jeter school for kids who want to be benignly cool and down with the brands.
Is that the full name of the school?
That's a crowded letterhead. Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an institution on the Upper East Side of Manhattan.
Of course it is.
But I do think that we've seen flashes of Judge, you know, having a real personality and having a way about him that is kind of comfortable with celebrity and with fame. And I hope that as he gets older and becomes more established and the Yankees, you know, continue to improve with this generation of players, that he will make that effort and seek out more fame. And just, you know, he doesn't have to be on every red carpet, but doing things like Sam did, you know, getting himself out there, talking to people about baseball in a very public way. I think he has the capability to do that. We'll see if he wants to do it. You know, I think that he's unique in a kind of like Stanton, but even more than Stanton, he's just like a very distinctive and unique guy. Like, he's so big that he stands out, and is almost like a curiosity in a way that makes people want to tune in. You know, the way that like Twitter reacted during his Home Run Derby performance this year of like, whoa, I had never seen this dude before, but this dude is awesome. You know, and he's baseball's largest adult son, like that whole thing. I think that there is a magnetism about him that if he wanted to, he could translate into real mainstream fame.
Yeah, I hear that. I think that, and I also think like he will seek out the spotlight a little bit more now that he's not a rookie. And like, I do think that that's part of it. It's like, you know, there's especially with an organization like the Yankees that are very sort of by the book, is like, you know, a rookie going on, you know, a lot of talk shows and stuff and like actively seeking out the spotlight, I think that maybe would not be perceived particularly well, or even by the New York media itself might not perceive that particularly well. So
I think he's going to be in demand now too, that the nation saw him a little bit more during this postseason, saw him making some good catches, saw him hitting some home runs. Like, remember when he did the Fallon thing way back 1,000 years ago when he wore glasses and no one knew who he was? He was just the Clark Kent of suck eyes. Like, it was just obviously Aaron Judge, but wearing glasses. I don't think that that would work now in New York.
I think he would
need a more complex disguise to pull that off now. So I think that's going to keep happening.
Yeah. I'll say my list, I thought Judge is probably the most likely. I would say Harper is, I think, second most likely, just because he's so freaking good that, like, at a certain level, like, he has a magnet. He's not only good, he's good and has a magnetism about the way he plays the game, which is important. And like, I think some of that has to at some point catch in the consciousness of the world, especially just like, I don't know, with like his future, where he might end up playing baseball in the future being a question, like all those kinds of things will matter. I think Stanton going on Kimmel apropos of nothing, I think, is a kind of a canary in the coal mine, that he wants to be a little bit more famous than he is, and I think he absolutely should be a little bit more famous than he is. I think he's revered in Miami, and I think the rest of the country needs to really become aware of who Giancarlo Stanton is. But I'm going to give you a dark horse candidate who I would bet on if I was betting on who's the most famous baseball player. If somebody would take my money on this, I would bet on it. But it is Shohei Ohtani, I believe, will be the most famous baseball player by the end of 2018. And I think it will be a situation where he comes to Major League Baseball, he lights it up both at the plate and on the mound, and it just like it in April, it's just a blitz, and it's just like, oh my God, this guy is here and he's unbelievable. And like, the only thing I can really compare it to, I was racking my head and trying to think of like what it would be like, is Linsanity, in that like it was just this 2-week thing where just Jeremy Lin was the most famous person in the world. And I think something similar could happen with Ohtani, where like he just is must-see TV every time he plays, and just like everything shuts down so that everybody could watch him play. That would be my dark horse prediction.
That'd be fun.
I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah.
Ian, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that would be very cool. You know, I think maybe just the fact that it, like, would be unique, and that we really have never seen a real, like, pitcher hitter do it, that might be enough to generate some interest from people who aren't necessarily baseball fans. It would be easy to really be, like, real-world famous. But it's very easy to understand, okay, this pitching and hitting, and no one has really ever done both before, and this guy's doing it. You know, that would be a storyline that I think could
absolutely. And like, just sort of the I think people like international debuts. Like, I think people really like that. And that was part of the mystique of Puig, and that was part of Yoenis Cespedes taking the league by storm, and, you know, Tanaka, and just like that seems to be something that people like. And I think if he does it in a way that no one has ever seen, it's I think, especially because, you know, he might go to Chicago or L.A. or to New York. And so, like, if you have just a lot of those kind of factors coming in together, I think that's the smart money.
You should tell him to also get, like, a really cute dog so that he can boost that kind of level, you know, for people who just don't even care at all about baseball. But they're like, oh, I'm hearing this name a lot. I like that guy's dog. Just, you know, a boost. Just, like, a little boost.
I know. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Yeah. We'll need to revisit this.
Or he needs
at the
end
of
you know how
year.
Like, Yu Darvish has a food Instagram.
Yes,
that's real. Bryce's is fine, but Yu Darvish's is a legitimate food Instagram.
We already did a podcast about that.
I know. He needs to.
Gemma clearly has opinions about Bryce's food blog.
He needs to like do something that will increase his fame among even people who don't really pay that much attention, and then therefore convert them into baseball fans.
That he does need to do that.
Yes,
that is yes. Mm-hmm. No pressure or anything. I know you're going to be moving to a brand new country where you, I don't think he speaks English. So it's going to be fascinating. This whole thing will be utterly fascinating. But like I said, we need to revisit this next year and see who is
the closest to being
correct. You know, he might not even play Major League Baseball. I'll look like a fool.
We'll
who
see.
Knows? Let us now summarize the podcast into 140 characters. That's right. We're out of time, folks.
Wow. It's,
I know. This one flew by because we're having so much fun talking about the World Series. But I do want to say we got an email this week, from Amanda Berman, friend of the pod, who it turns out is also an intern at the Baseball Hall of Fame, which I'm jealous. No
that's
offense to
really,
Ian,
really
but
cool.
That seems much cooler than this job. And did she email? She emailed us to tell us, did you know that the Baseball Hall of Fame has recently acquired a literal ear of corn from the Field of Dreams?
That is very interesting.
I think that is cool. That is a fun fact that I am glad that we now know. And then she also went on to say that she tried to get the Hawk Harrelson alarm clock into an exhibit in the Hall of Fame, and it sounds like that's not going to happen, which is a shame. I think you should all tweet at the Baseball Hall of Fame and tell them that you want to see the Hawk Harrelson alarm clock in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I don't know why that wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. It is a fame-worthy masterpiece of merchandising.
It's absurd. I believe he's nominated this year for the Frick Award, or he won the Frick Award last year, so he is an iconic broadcaster on an iconic invention, the alarm clock. It makes perfect sense.
Dakota's midway through composing a 2,000-word email to the Hall of Fame about why this alarm clock should be included.
At any rate, thank you to Amanda for your email. You can email us, cut4cast@mlb.com. Any questions, comments, concerns. But we must summarize the podcast in 140 characters. Ian, what have you got?
What did we talk about this week? It's been such a blur.
Just summarize your chill LA life right now.
I am right now, just side note, a little behind the scenes, I'm staring at a hotel window at the 105 freeway.
So LA!
101. That's two different tours. The 101 and the 5.
That should just be the tweet.
Yeah.
I think that's the tweet. I'm looking out a hotel room at the 101 freeway.
That's a very traveling baseball writer tweet.
It is.
Yeah.
We didn't really get into this, but the LA life that you may think I have been leading is like the, you know, like the beach and the In-N-Out Burger and the fun LA life. But my life has really been a little bit more like the True Detective season 2 version of LA.
Okay. Okay.
Like the dark industrial underbelly of LA.
So
a cult vibe.
So not like a work vacation, not a working vacation, you would say.
Yeah, it's mostly just been working.
Working the freeway. Okay, that was a decent tweet. I think you should have your tweet with True Detective Season 2 at the end. Remember that meme? We'll bring that back.
We should bring that back.
We crowdsourced your tweet.
I was shocked that Vince Vaughn didn't show up somewhere at Dodger Stadium yesterday.
I mean, there's
Isn't
still
a,
a chance.
Fan?
That's true. I think he is a Cubs fan.
He was around at Wrigley a lot last year.
An LA guy.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who moved to LA who are like now lifelong Dodger fans, even though it's like I know that you're a Mets fan. What are you doing?
Betrayal.
I know. It's clear. It's like it's one thing if you're a fan of an AL team. At any rate, Gemma, give us your tweet.
All right. The most famous baseball player of 2018 will be Aaron Judge, but actually it will just be @ENK_ doing an impression of him on the podcast.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That was a really good tweet.
Thank you. I'm great at Twitter. I'm not, but that one time.
Okay. Let me think. Yeah, you were good last week, and you're good this one. You're on fire.
Now I'm jinxed.
Okay. I have nothing, so we're going to see what happens. I'm just going to start talking. We're going to see what happens.
Wait. Well, you have 280 characters, so it's okay.
Yeah, you've been traveling, and I get it. Okay. Here's a hot take, comma... parentheses, even hotter than game one of the hashtag World Series, close parentheses, colon, Shohei Ohtani will be the most famous baseball player in 2018, period. You can put it on the board, yes! Exclamation mark.
Dakota just did the world's smallest pen flip to celebrate that tweet.
That was a good tweet. You know that was a good tweet. If you look,
fine.
It was a great tweet. That incorporated everything. It was good. I know that you thought it was good, so you should tweet us at Cut4 with hashtag Cut4Cast with your summary of the podcast and whether or not you thought whether or not you thought my tweet was a good tweet. I can't talk though, so you shouldn't tweet about that. You can go to MLB.com/cut4 to read about all the things we talked about today. Many, many more that we didn't have time to talk about today. There was all kinds of stuff. There were photos of celebrities at the game. It was nuts. Go to MLB.com/cut4 to see all of that. You can go to Facebook.com/cut4. You can like our page. All our stuff will appear there free of charge. Facebook:free. You can go to Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at cut4. You can email us, as I said, cut4cast@mlb.com. This is a podcast. I don't know how you stumbled upon this podcast. I don't. Maybe somebody scrawled a URL into a textbook and you typed it into your computer, which you should never do. And it was just the streaming version of this podcast. You're like, what is this podcast? This is the Cut4Cast. You can go to Apple Podcasts and you can type in Cut4Cast. Click subscribe. While you're there, you can leave us a rating 1 to 5 stars. You can actually take time to type out a review. That helps other people find the show. Ian, thank you for calling us from your corner suite. I think it was the presidential suite of the Beverly Hills Hotel, I believe is where you're staying. So thank you for taking time out of your luxurious trip to call
Guys,
into the couple.
Beverly
couch.
Hilton, do you know anything? Have some class.
I look forward to your accommodations in Houston. Gemma, thank you, as always, for being here.
Of course.
And for laughing at my hilarious joke at the beginning of the podcast. But mostly, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.